Guys, hello. Welcome to Presenting Bikes. This is episode 2 of our preview review show. We're discussing all things the Whoop Mountain Bike World Series. My name's Lauren Smith. I'm your host, and I'm delighted to have a serious crew alongside me. And I'm going to bring them all in now. I mean, we're going to look back on round one in Marapura and ahead to our first Brazilian stop. We've got Rebecca Henderson from Primflor Mondraker Race Team. Hey, Beck.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, all good. Anton Cooper, Trek Factory Racing, Pirelli.
G'day.
G'day.
Yeah, good, thanks.
And we've got Elizabeth Walker, the team manager of Live Factory Racing, who pits include the Olympic bronze medalist and Linda Indergand, USA's Jen Jackson, and Ronja Blocklinger. Guys, it's so good to have you with us. Let's kick things off with, how's your weekend been? Anyone can jump in. Beth, start with you.
Me? Yeah, I mean, it's a pleasure to be here in Brazil for me a lot. I was pretty on the fence of if I would come or not come. So I think it's really nice to be back here at the races. And I mean, I can't complain at all.
Yeah, Beck, I think that's really interesting. There are quite a few riders who thought about coming or not coming, and we're missing quite a few. But I have to say that it was really exciting to be in Marapura for the first round. And I had a great drive with my team up to Arusha, and looking forward to another exciting weekend up here.
Yeah, well, we ended up flying, and I wasn't sure if the drive was going to be shorter or...
So that may or may not being heard by the rest of us. Poor Anton having some serious internet difficulties. That's what happens when you have a big race team, right? They're all on the internet at the same time watching Netflix.
They get to fly and they don't have to do the drive, but there they are without any internet. So, you know.
Grafting pays off. And Beck, I mean, obviously had a pretty bad injury pre-season that happened so close to the start. I'm assuming that was the reason why you were unsure about coming to these first few rounds.
Yeah, for me it was like, yeah, I was definitely planning to be here. I know a few riders have skipped due to it's Olympic season and, yeah, you know, people get mad. But yeah, for me it was injury based. 2 days before the Nationals, a few weeks ago, I had a crash and ruptured some ligaments in my ankle. And then, so that was a few days before Nationals and Oceanas. And those were the two races that I was planning to use to be fast for this. And I lost some training days and those races. And, you know, we weren't sure how the recovery was going to go. And it's, my ankle is not amazing, but it's functional for the moment. So, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, do we go, do we not go? But, yeah, I mean, I can ride, as we saw last weekend, I can do it. And, yeah, I think it's also, you know, we've had a lot of changes this year with the schedule. So for me it was like, okay, maybe I'm not going to be in my best shape. And I really surprised myself on Saturday. But there's a lot of more things behind it that make the trip worthwhile with the change in schedule, racing Saturday, Sunday. And, yeah, I mean, I train and I want to race World Cup. So, you know, it makes sense to be here.
So functional enough to put you on a podium, Beck.
Yeah,
doesn't sound
that
injured.
I mean, yeah, I know, and for sure, people are like, "Oh, yeah, what are you talking about?" And but honestly, I'm like a bit fed up with it at the moment. I have to tape my ankle before every training, and always taking care of it, and like it's so swollen and puffy, and it's driving me mad. I think like in the beginning of the rehab, you're like, "Yes, come on, super focused, super motivated," and then I'm like, "Oh, I've had enough of taping it," and some days I'm like, no more. But yeah,
what about your gang, Liz? Like, how have they all settled into the season?
Yeah, I think like last season felt like a really long season, and you know, there's a couple things I think I want to say here. It must be really difficult for athletes, because it's really difficult for me when you start to see people posting about the start of their seasons and you're not doing the same thing, or you're not doing the same amount of stuff. And so I can only imagine that for the athlete, it creates a little bit of anxiety. And then you get on the start line for the first time at some of the like more local, regional, continental races. And then you head up to a World Cup for the first time. And I can only imagine the amount of nerves and anxiety and second guessing your training leading up to all of this. And so our athletes have, two of our athletes have taken a similar approach and one of our athletes took a completely different approach. Rania Blocklinger is extending her off season a little bit longer. The highs are high and the lows are low, and you spend so much time together in this April to October timeframe, and then all of a sudden it ends. And it's, I mean, even for me, honestly, as a team manager, at the end of the season, every season, I kind of like cry on the couch for a couple days, because it's that come down of this, you know, very like high stress environment, even if it's a positive stress or a good stress. So Ronya's decided to extend her her off season and her base training a little bit longer. So she's not here with us in Brazil. And then both Linda and Jen really kind of stayed close to home. And Linda did like one or two road races. And then she did two Swiss Cups back to back in March. Jen did two US Cups back to back in March and April. And so they kind of had a pretty chill off season and prep leading into this first round. And then from the staff perspective, there's a bunch of hurry up and wait, it feels like, where you're doing all this prep work in the background, but you can't actually do anything with it but besides type on the keyboard. And then it's go time, and go time happens, and you're just like, wow, okay, we're back at it.
I guess that's to an extent like what happens for you as well, Beck. It's all this build up. You might have a couple of C1 races and then it's like, whoa, I'm at the start line. We do this all over again, and then times it by 1,000, Olympic year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Liz is right about people. The Olympics always shakes things up, and people, you know, we're seeing in like Brazil, it's the main qualification race for most of the countries, and you know, there's like a lot of riders fighting for their, in the form of their lives, fighting for their Olympic place. And then there's those, like, I'm really fortunate to be on the other side where I'm pretty fine for that. Like, the place is secured, and my place is more or less, you know, barring things, is secured. So I really have that pressure off. But you know, like Liz says, you see people in January, February, absolutely flying, and you're like, whoa, I haven't even done an interval yet. But, you know, it's different people have different goals this year, and it's, you know, and then there's those that probably know that they're not going to be in the Olympics, and so they can just, okay, I'm here for the World Cup. And I think everybody comes with a different perspective, and, you know, and then you see riders skipping these races because they're focused on the Olympics, and, you know, you skip races and you add more pressure, and there's like, there's just so many different points of view, more than normal. You know, people for the world champs last year, you see people skipping races, but it goes next level when it comes to Olympics. And I think we're going to see some crazy different performances. You're going to see some super fast now and explode by Olympics, and then you'll see, yeah, a lot of different ways, and some are going to arrive just bang, here I am for Olympics, and others will try to do that and won't achieve it. And yeah, the dynamic is so different this year. And for me, I was so like, yeah, I'm very lucky to be so much more relaxed, and I stayed home all summer. We didn't have a UCI race in Australia. I did a marathon, and so I arrived to Brazil like, I was in the start box before the short track, and I like was looking around, and I said to my staff, like, I can see everybody with this energy and they're full and buzzing and full of caffeine. And like, I can just feel this, like, this tension in the air. And I was like, why am I not feeling this? Like, what's wrong? And then my manager was like, don't worry, 10 seconds after the start, you know what you're doing. And then I arrived to the start line and I was a little bit shaky. I'm like, oh, it's the first race. And for us now, it's like, you know, like Liz says, hurry up and wait. And it is a bit like that, because now this week it's, what, Wednesday, and we haven't seen the course yet. I know a lot of people are walking it, but we haven't seen the course yet. Tomorrow is the first course training, but we don't race till Saturday. And then it's like, boom, Saturday, Sunday is like everything in this 24-hour window. And it's like, whoa. Like, So it's like, it's so, so, so relaxed now. And then when you have to switch on, it's like really, really full on.
Is it not one of the best things though, that like nervous energy, especially when you're like in your pits just before you go to that start line, and like how you like harness it over the years and how experience plays into that? I don't know, for me, when I used to come into your pits pre-race, like that was the bit where even it got me going as well. It was like, oh, we're about to start. It's building. And it's like, it's a little bit anxiety, but at the same time, it's also excitement and it's fear of the unknown. But it's also like, we know what we're doing. We've got this, like all of that coming together is probably one of my favorite parts of any race day in like the sport in general. But it might be really different for you guys on the other side.
I think it's an amazing moment, that last 20 minutes before, you know, you start leaving your pits, you're like checking the last things on your bike, you put your gloves on or whatever, like those last details that you do, and then you arrive to the start boxes and the tension is just like increasing. And I think, you know, like I'm one of the oldest girls racing, and it's still, you know, like I think I'm very calm, and like before the start I don't have that, you know, like I said on Saturday, that tension was maybe missing a little bit, but it's like you're still excited to race, and you're not like, you're not there just to like make up the numbers or this is what we do week in, week out. Like every single time you line up for a World Cup, it's like there's something inside you that has to go.
Liz, you're like the opposite, because I suppose your job is to be the cool, calm, collected kind of rock in those moments.
Yeah, I hope I do that well. I don't know. it doesn't matter. I mean, the schedule from last year to this year has changed. So it is a little bit learning a new, and just a new rhythm. But it doesn't matter how many years I've been doing this. I have my own flow where I set alarms on my phone to remind me, you know, like this is when transponder pickup is, this is when you need to take the rollers to the boxes, this is when the boxes close. It even if the time doesn't change week to week, still set the alarms in my phone, and it's like that is what helps me calm, because I know that I have something in my pocket that's going to like go like ding, ding, you're not going to forget this, don't worry. And then with our staff, I try to set like really clear expectations of like, okay, this is what the physio is in charge of doing. This is what the chef is in charge of doing. This is who is taking this to here and that to there. There's very little speaking, a little bit more just like nodding and grunting and throughout the day while we try to like keep it chill.
Now, I do want to go through the races on the weekend and get your insights into them. If we kick things off, I've just got the overalls of the under 23s. Liz, I don't know if you guys can see that well, but you're probably almost best placed here to give us a little bit of an insight into the girls on that leaderboard. How impressed are you with what you saw in Brazil?
Yeah, super impressed. There were quite a few women who moved up into elite for 2024, Ronya included. And, you know, I go to every single race because I'm genuinely curious. I know, especially like Beck said, in an Olympic year, weird things happen. There's always going to be riders that end up at the front that you never expected to be up there. There's also going to be riders that kind of end up towards the back that you didn't expect to be there either. There's just this, I had an English teacher in high school that would call it a fruit basket turnover. Just like somebody took the basket and mixed it all up. And I think that we saw a little bit of that here in the women's U23 XCO race. Kira, like out of nowhere, super strong, does the double in both XCO and XCC in a new team, Cube Factory Racing. I think this is their first year as a brand new team. So clearly something is going super well for not only Kira, but that says a lot about the team behind her too. From my perspective, the role of the team is to completely mitigate stress and pressure for the athlete. Anything that we can take off, the little things, that's our job, because that's that much more energy that the rider can put into the bike. So when you have a team behind you that is dialed and you trust that they've got things taken care of, that your bike is set up well, that you're not going to have a mechanical that was avoidable, then the rider can get to that start line feeling confident already. So I'm super excited to see what happens with Kira as the not only this weekend, but then as the season progresses. And then it's super fun. We know Genia Calori is super strong rider. She has only been racing, don't quote me on this, but I want to say she's only been mountain biking for 4 years. So we know she has a big engine. Super exciting to see her up there on the podium. Emily Johnson, Sophia Waite, Ella McPhee, all of these ladies coming up into this next generation of excitement coming out of the U23 field.
Beck, you were leading the riders union and the kind of the go-between between the riders and the governing body. How much has your kind of role had to adapt since the kind of televisation of under 23 and kind of the pressure that this like younger generation are now under to perform?
Yeah, it's been a very interesting and challenging time and change for, I think, for everybody, for the teams, for the riders, for the new people coming in. It's been a really, really strange, I would say, last 18 months or so, or 2 years now. It's been, you know, the tension that started when we all got wind of what was going to happen, or when we didn't know what was going to happen. And it's been, yeah, I mean, now we have under 23 short track, which started last season. And I think, you know, a lot of people are, should they, shouldn't they? And, you know, it adds a lot to their plate. And yeah, I mean, they have been thrown in the deep end, and yeah, now they're on TV. And I think it's, you know, it's amazing that we have their races with coverage, but yeah, I mean, they do have big shoes to fill, and they have to put on a show. And you know, it's a lot, and it's been a lot of change for everybody. And I think some are adapting well, others are not. And yeah, there's a bit of a way to go, I think.
Talking of adapting well, if we look at the men's standings at the moment, you've got a couple of names that I feel like have been on the circuit for a number of years, therefore maybe perhaps finding kind of the televisation, the newfound kind of fame that comes with being at the top. But Riley Amos and Bjorn Riley, both two kind of guys out of the USA, Liz, who probably, or at least look at home on like the racetrack in front of the cameras with the increased kind of eyes on.
Yeah, I think that, you know, for the women too, this really gives a lot more opportunity to our younger riders. It is big shoes to fill. It is added stress and added pressure knowing that you're on display. It also adds a lot of value to our younger riders as they are looking for that support to move up into the elite ranks. And it is super exciting to see Bjorn Riley, I'm going to say Finn as well, from Switzerland, really coming into their own in this U23 field. We know Riley Amos is super strong because he was already dominating significantly last year. Again, in the U23 field, we saw some people graduate, like Carter Woods. And so it kind of opens up this potential for possibility for these new U23 riders. And it's exciting to see. I feel like, not that they're dogs or animals, but it's kind of like, you know, their leaders of last year have moved up into elite. And so now it's like kind of, you know, a little bit of a fight for pecking order here.
How does it change your role as a team manager and like looking at people you want to bring in? Because now it becomes almost mandatory to have riders in the under 23 classification.
Yeah, I think that, I think that having younger riders on your team is really important for many different reasons. One is that when you have a good structure and when you have that kind of factory or significant brand support, then you provide more of that privilege and opportunity to the younger riders so that they can progress. Now there's a little bit more return on investment with our U23 riders too, because you can show a little bit more through the media of who they are. You can build the story around them and now develop them as personalities associated with your brand. But also if we only ever sign elite athletes to our team, then the younger generation is going to fizzle out. We no longer have developing talent. And so I see it, you know, as my role is I have this privilege that it's now my privilege to provide this opportunity to younger writers to, you know, help them develop and to make sure that I have elite writers in 2, 3, 4 years who aren't elite writers yet.
One thing that was really cool about both Riley Amos and Bjorn Riley's involvement there is with them and the success of the USA national team in the elite ranks, that's been massive for potentially securing them Olympic qualification spots.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, I can only imagine, I haven't been in any of these conversations because it's not really my role as the team manager. It's more of the National Federation leadership that does this, but it seems like they collectively knew that they had a mission and that all rose to the challenge of, you know, we need USA on top for this Olympic qualification, and they did it. It was truly amazing.
Should we start with XCC? Start with the men's. Sam Gaze back on top, Lucas Schelsbauer taking second, Martin Fedari, Kossmann. That for me was what's most exciting because we were so invested in Martin Fedari for his under 23 campaign. I think he kind of didn't come on top of the podium for one round in his entire year. And then last year he kind of came into the elite ranks and he needed to settle. And I'd say he's quite quiet. I'd love to know what kind of stood out about his performance both in the XCC, but then later like backing it up to a certain extent in the XCO.
It's so hard for me to comment, honestly. I think I can't say that I watched the entire race. I saw bits and pieces, but yeah, I mean, as I said, like how it's pretty unfair for me to make comment because I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, we lost Anton. And he opted out when the internet was just not working.
We need
Anton. He was my mail
from inside the race. But I mean, you know, this is what's so hard about the racing now is that it's so full on. It's like you're in your own little bubble, and I don't know what's going on inside the men's racing, so it's pretty hard for me to say.
Do you speak to Andre at all about it?
Yes, of course.
What are the conversations you guys have about the men's racing at the moment?
Yeah, Chinky's not the best in short track, to be fair. He's like, he's not up there fighting in those front positions and getting, you know, it's a short track really is a challenge for him, and that stitches him up a bit in the cross country races. We're the only two elite riders in the team, so we're always talking about the racing. And he's definitely not shoulder to shoulder with those guys when it comes to short track racing.
It feels like more now than ever, we're kind of beginning to get these really specialized short track riders where they're dedicating more of their season towards being successful in this. Does that change like a team dynamic? Would you think about bringing in a rider specifically to be successful in this and getting overall standings and world championships in the short discipline?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think that, you know, ultimately it's ideal to be really good at both, or, you know, good enough at both, because your XCC result is going to directly impact your start grid position for the XCO. It's obvious to me, but there was actually a study done specifically on the start grid. And yeah, sure enough, like the farther back you are, the harder it is to win. Yeah, strange, but there's research behind it. But it's also, I think that from a marketing or a branding perspective, to be able to show a photo of your athlete, your bike, your brand on the podium, is the person who's scrolling the screen going to recognize that it's XCC versus XCO? Maybe, maybe not. It depends on how dedicated and knowledgeable your followers are. But I would argue that if you have someone who is really strong in short track and isn't as strong in XCO, but you know that they're going to podium in short track week after week after week, yeah, having a specialist on your team is a great idea, because you can, you know, I'm not going to say guarantee, but you have that higher return on investment of being able to post a podium shot with your brand front and center.
I would say, though, that, like, when you look at the results list each week from the short track, more or less it's like, you know, you see a few specialists or whatever, but, like, more or less the ones, it's always the same riders. Like, you know, you might see that there's someone, Amona, for example, is pretty average when it comes to short track, and she's up there in the cross country. But on average, it's more or less there or thereabouts. You know, you might see someone who's exceptional at short track and a bit further down, but it's amazing. Sometimes I'm so surprised, compared to the old discipline of eliminator, that was black and white difference, but it still impresses me more or less how similar it is when you compare the results sheets cross country to short track each time. I mean, we probably think of Luca as like a short track specialist, but if you see his results in the cross country last year, he was amazing. And I think, and you know, 2 years ago, Alessandra won the short track and the cross country in the overall. So it's like, it's pretty consistently the same there or thereabouts, in my opinion.
What was it like to be out there this weekend, Beck, on that short track course?
Amazing. I mean, for me to be back racing in Brazil is like, I feel this little, I don't know, I was, even when I'm racing in late 20s, it's like everybody was there. Like, I felt this extra support. I think I'm, you know, I had a very fortunate experience in Brazil last time I was here, and I think
probably the coolest experience in the world. No,
yeah, I mean, you know, one of those things that you work so hard for and it finally, like, many years later it comes. But yeah, I mean, it's the Brazilian fans here are something special, and you know, they are so passionate, and they love everybody. They're, you know, they're not just sort of, you know, there's other countries you go where there's so much passion, but they're always more biased towards their people. But I think, I don't know, they love it here, and you feel that they're so grateful to have the event here. And it's something really special. And I think to get out there and race in front of them is like, we'll give you the best show we can.
Did you feel like you had extra support from the Brazilian crowds because of your World Cup win 2 years ago? Like, did they know who you were more so?
Yeah, I genuinely did, because sometimes I was like riding in the race around other riders and I would felt like I was just hearing my name, and I'm like always my name and not theirs. And I was like, oh, it's like, I don't know, it could just be in my head, and I don't want to be like, yeah, I'm the most important person. But yeah, I really felt like there was a lot of love there.
What are your main memories of 2021?
Oh, it's I think it was all very like shock, and I had an interview with you, Lauren, after, and if you remember, I was very lost for words. But I did actually watch this
race.
Was
it the first and only time you swore?
Yes. it's very out of character, actually. I'm not, that's so, it was just like, you know, I mean, it was something so unexpected for me. And I think, you know, we all strive to do it and achieve to be the very best we can. And we want to be the best in the world, but it doesn't always happen and things don't always work out. And for me, it was, one of the most amazing moments of my life.
So in that race, Evie kind of bowed her time, kicked on off the pump track and just created a little bit of an insurmountable lead. You were kind of, to a certain extent, responsible for the chasing pack. What was the kind of overall strategy at that stage? Was she catchable? How did it all plan out in the last couple of rounds? It was only a kilometre, wasn't it? It's such a fast lap.
Yeah, the race, I think, was quite strange, actually, because it's it wasn't particularly – it was fast but not full in the first few laps. And I was like, And I just wanted to keep the pressure on early. I was sort of in the front in the early laps just to not let that pace go off a bit because, I mean, for me, I was thinking, oh, top eight would be amazing. And, you know, I was like seeing that there were little gaps and, okay, like let's maintain that. And Kate started to push. And I think, Evie, you know, if you have confidence, you can sit behind and wait and wait. And I didn't actually see when Evie went. I was further back in the group. And then there was a gap. But, yeah, it's amazing the difference between, like, four laps to go was, like, the pace is good and nobody's, like, really, really pushing. And then in one moment it's, like, poof, the race is apart. And it's – you think, like, I was thinking four laps to go, maybe I should go, maybe I should go, no, Beck, be patient, be calm. And then it's amazing in short track how from 1 second to the other you can think, like, I'm on to, like, I'm dead. And I think especially in this heat and, like, the humidity, it's, like, you still see, like, the riders who are calm under pressure and, you know, were, I wouldn't say Evie was conservative, but you can't be conservative. But, you know, like, you saw the people with experience were still, like, coming to the front in the short track because it was, like, it was a hard one, I think.
From the sidelines, Liz, what did you make of that race?
I thought that, I don't know, I'm actually curious to hear what Beck says about this, but it seemed like the pump track was really quite a deciding factor positioning for most of the riders. Yeah, it was either you were good and you can pump and you can create or maintain speed through that, or you're not. And it was like, from my perspective watching this, I was like, gosh, if I know I can ride a pump track, there are definitely people I want to make sure to get around, because when that break does happen, I don't want to be stuck behind them right here. I'm pretty sure that's also where Evie made her move.
Yeah, was
she kind of took off at the beginning of the pump track. She knew, like, okay, I'm going to pump and I'm going to use this as the opportunity to, like, string this out a little bit. And then it goes uphill right after that. And she just, like, laid into that power that she's got to increase the gap. And then Evie is such a strong, powerful climber, but she's also, like, no fear descender. And so it was like this perfect kind of storm that she created using the pump track to her advantage to string it out and then go with it.
Yeah, I reckon that's so interesting. Like, to me, an uphill pump track, never a good idea. it was, for me, this was the part of the course that I hated the most. It was like you were arrive and you, like, got a somewhat of a rhythm as much as you can in short track, and you arrive and then you're like, oh. And it, for me, I was like, okay, I just have to try to use this part to rest a bit, because I'm like, I felt like I'm just going to put all this energy and I'm just getting, like, bucked and moved and, like, and so I took it more as, like, it's a tiny bit of rest. But yeah, it was messy because early in the race, there's, you know, it's bar to bar, and, like, Yolanda and I almost got into a big crash because a rider in front of us was doing crazy things. And it was like, for me, the pump track was an absolute mess. But yeah, I mean, Evie obviously executed it perfectly. If she had energy to, you know, pump where people like me are resting, like, that's the perfect recipe. And I think, you know, she obviously was really able to use it to her advantage.
It played into the hands of riders who spend a lot of time with downhill specialists and, like, kind of like free ride special people who play, like Chris Blevins has done every discipline under the sun. You know, he gets on that pump track and he's just having a good time, you know, like, it's very, same with Evie. She spends so much time with Tracy Mosley and, like, working on her kind of, I'd say, like, downhill techniques, right? Like, and they probably go to a bike park and then go, oh, should we just go have a play on that pump track? And I guess people, like, at your legs, right? Pumping is absolutely brutal on your legs. All the BMXers that I know who do a lot of pump track on the side, you know, they're also exceptional at explosive weightlifting. They're all, like, cleaning over 100, the girls are cleaning over 100 kgs because of that explosive power. And if you start building that, I guess, then the climb afterwards, like, it's just all in the locker. It didn't seem to even touch the sides with either of them. It's very cool. I do appreciate, though, I see a pump track in a XCC race and I am like, yikes. Like, that can't be fun to manage.
Uphill is not, it's not the most amazing thing you can do.
Okay, should we take a look at the XCO? Should we start with the men's? Vex like, yeah, I was doing my own thing at this stage. But it was a domination by Specialized Factory Racing. What were they doing in the off season? Has anyone seen them on site? What were the confidence levels like? Like, that's a really impressive kind of, I think it must be the first time ever on a podium you had three riders from one team. I can't think of what other team might even have three riders who would finish top five.
I think at least in recent history, for sure. Yeah. I think we've seen days in the past with similar things, but yeah, I think, but I mean, they're all like Blevins from USA and Koretsky from France. It's like, I don't think they're like spending time together in the off season, like doing big training camps or whatever. I think it's, from my point of view as an athlete, I see it more as almost a coincidence. I think it's just they're both obviously working hard and maybe the Olympic factor, who knows? I mean, I think obviously they've done something right, but I don't, from my point of view, I'm not sure the team can take all the credit straight off the off season for that one.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what they put together for this week. Yeah, you know, like one thing that I said to my athletes too is like, you know, this is the first race. We can't make gross assumptions of how the rest of the season is going to go just on one race. But I got to give it to them. Like, that was pretty amazing for Specialized to have those three riders, top five, really owning the podium. You know, I know Benno really runs a tight ship over there. Maybe the like most improved player award goes to Martin Vidaure. Really cool to see him on the podium for both XCC and XCO. So I'm really excited to see what happens, particularly with Specialized team here in Arsha.
Chris Blevins with his second ever World Cup win. It was in completely almost the opposite conditions that we saw him race his first when we were in Snowshoe. What was that, 2 years ago? Plus, yeah, totally. He's a bit of a roadie, like, and he's still comparatively to us ladies, a youngster. Is that someone that, you know, we are only going to see improve and get better and better?
I would say there's a solid chance for sure. I've actually frankly been quite surprised that we haven't seen him on the podium more between that Snowshoe win and now. So I think that that he has all the tools in his toolbox putting it together, and we saw just from him in Maripora.
The other really noticeable thing about that top five, if we maybe ignore Martin Vidaure for a second, French, Swiss, USA, all riders who are trying to fight for their position to go to Paris. And I don't think that's any sort of coincidence with these races being such a key part of the selection process.
One more thing about the men's race that I thought was very cool, and they did mention this on the live coverage, was that there was a solid group of, let's say 11-ish riders that were more or less with each other for the entirety of the race. There was that small break kind of at the beginning and middle, and then the chase group caught up to them. And, you know, as I was watching the race, I was like, gosh, like any one person in that 11 could win. Because there was enough time left in the race that for someone could make a move. And it was just cool that there were 11 people in contention for the podium, not just a handful.
Pink Bike does this really cool thing where after the race, they kind of space the distances of time when people cross the line and they make a little graph. And the women's really consistent. It's like everyone's very equally equidistant. But with the men's, what was really interesting is they were all in very like, they were all clumped. So it's almost like in that situation, it almost looks like they race the people around them. And actually the gaps in between the various groups, so your lead group, your chase group, you know, your second chase group, are harder and less easy when you're in that situation to kind of surmount? I mean, I wouldn't know. I've never sat in a men's XCO race, but like that's certainly, I would love to see more and make it and comparative, like, but when like that lead group seems to go, it becomes very difficult for the chasing group on that course to catch up. And then there was a couple of places on course, you saw it in the women's race as well, Beck, that really separated. We already mentioned the pump track, but there was that first steep incline where, especially in the women's, maybe three or four managed to get through on the pedals. And then after that, people were jumping off. And it's like this ripple effect. Like the importance, I guess, of getting through those unscathed really played out through the rest of the race.
Yeah, you have so much. If you can, like, if you can get off to a good start, it's just, it doesn't, like, guarantee you a good finish. And if you have a terrible start, it doesn't mean you're not going to be up there. But, I mean, it helps a lot if you can just take that pressure off and you don't feel like you're playing catch-up. Or I was running up that hill and it's just, like, it's a mess. And this, there's all this stress that it's, like, if you guys all, if everyone just, like, went down a notch of, like, stress and anxiety, we'd probably be up here, like, so much quicker. But, I mean, everyone's got their race heads on and everyone's so desperately trying to, you know, we're fighting for positions. And you also can't just be like, oh, yeah, like here we are, cool, calm and collected, because like seven people will run past you. And I think it can be like a really stressful experience. But I think you're right. Like as far as if you're racing in a group, it's very hard to bridge to that next group in front. You have to be like, you have to be on the move so much more than the people around you, because you race the people around you and you're, you know, and it's something that I find very frustrating when I'm riding in the 20s, because it's like, I'm trying to get there. I want to be up there. I want to move to top 10 or whatever. And, but sometimes you're around riders who are like really motivated for those 10, 15, 20 positions. And they want to race you, but you're trying to bridge gaps to the groups in front. And then, you know, you're doing more work and they're getting more seated. And I think sometimes it's like, that's why it's so hard to bridge to the next groups, because it's not smooth in a group. You know, it's passing, chopping, you go up a climb and you think you're doing well and then someone undercuts you and, you know, passes you for the descent, or, you know, it's, and it's not smooth because you're not riding your rhythm. You have to race the people around you. And I think that's what makes it, you know, really hard to, that's why those gaps go, because you're not riding your best time. You're in a race with the people around you, and it's very, very hard once those gaps open. Unless you've got the best legs, it's really hard to make that difference up.
How often do you find people willing to go on those endeavors with you? It's probably even harder for you being the only like main elite female in your team, so you don't really have teammates to rely on in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I was riding a lot with the Ghost Girls, and there's a lot of girls who are, you know, they have that same sort of mentality, like we're not trying to stuff each other around. We're all, like, you know, trying to be further up the front and we're trying to close those gaps. And I was riding with Linda from Liv a lot in the race, and, you know, we're not, like, chopping each other to try and, you know, they're the moves that, you know, if it's your first time in the top 20, of course you're going to be fighting for every corner and not going to let someone just ride a good rhythm. But I think some of us with more, if we have a bad start or something, we're more, you know, we have a different goal. And you really see that. And actually as someone, one of the older ones who is trying to bridge that gap, it can get very frustrating. But it's also part of racing that you have to assume and, you know, and not get caught up in those little fights, and you do end up doing more work than you'd like to. And sometimes you do drag someone along and they get you. But it's the risk you take trying to close that those gaps closer to the front.
Liz, there are a lot of major names that kind of we didn't see or we didn't expect to perform. Honestly, the psychology behind racing, I've no doubt, play so many, like every little thing around you probably influences an outcome on a day, and one day can be completely different to another day, and there's no rhyme or reason necessarily. But there were a couple of big faces that you would say stereotypically you'd see in the top 10 who kind of just weren't there. First and foremost, Loana Lecomte had a crash, pretty uncharacteristic. And then Steger, we didn't really see kind of the impact of Steger. What do you what do you see that being? Is there something that was down to on the racetrack in terms of how the race was being raced, or just a little bit of it happened on the day and we don't look any further than that?
Yeah, I don't know. No, I think that there are so many factors, both internal and external, that can affect all of it. And I'm going to say, like, none of my athletes are allowed to watch this. I see that the personality of my athletes change throughout the week. So maybe like Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, as we're arriving, everything's super happy. Everybody's having a great time. And for sure, as we get closer to race day, it gets a little prickly. It's a psychology of knowing that this big thing is coming, and there's a lot of pressure regarding, you know, not only your contract. If you know you're in a contract year, it's the first time or the second time you're lining up at the World for the year. It's Olympic qualification. There's so much going on. And then you add on to that the external factors of the heat, the humidity, being in a country where many of us don't have a lot of familiarity. All of these things, internal and external, can affect what happens on race day, because these little things add or suck energy from the athlete, from the staff, from everybody. So there's no way to know what happened. That, you know, uncharacteristically, we have some crashes, or we see people a lot farther back than we expected. We also see people a lot farther up than we expected. And you know, kind of like I said earlier, I would say it's too early to make gross generalizations about people's fitness or their mental fitness and fortitude as well. So it's going to be extra curious to see, you know, what happens this weekend. And then we've got, I'm going to say that we have a break, but we don't really have a break, because I know Pan American Continental Championships, European Continental Championships, then we go straight into Novo Mesto. Then we've got, you know, June is full gas. And so we've got kind of this really big cramped season starting now. So so I would say that we should expect the unexpected for the next few weeks, for sure.
One trend that was quite noticeable is that of the ladies who raced in the C1 the week prior, that had a very strong correlation with who finished in the top 10. Is that just because it's Brazil, or is that kind of getting a bit of race pace in the field under your legs? Like, what do you think that sounds to you guys?
Yeah, I don't know. Beck, like, you probably have a lot better perspective here. My guess would be, you know, the being more familiar with the track, so that when race day happens, you already know the sensations that you want and need to feel as you are entering the start loop, the position that you want to be in. Even if you've had practice time on the track, practice time is limited. So you have essentially had, you know, an extra, you know, double, if not triple, the amount of time on track. And that's something that you no longer have to worry about. It's subconscious. You are now kind of the robot putting in inputs onto the track, and now you're more focused on what's happening around you with new riders.
Yeah, I think it's for sure that's like a huge advantage, as long as you also don't get bored. I mean, it's for me, I don't love the idea of racing the same track two times in a row. I think you can get a lot of experience, and I think the ones that they've done lap on lap on lap on lap and you know everything, which is obviously a nice advantage. But I think it actually, for me, to see the difference between, I mean, that the sort of same riders were on that C1 the week before here, to me it shows the motivation levels of these athletes. The ones that, not motivation, the scheduling. And, you know, for some, Brazil, these back-to-back, you know, when you have two World Cups back-to-back, it's a very big portion of the main races for the whole year. We only have, say, 10 races that we are all in for. And I think they've come 1 week before the rest of us to be here to prepare specifically for these World Cups. And so I think that just shows sort of planning behind with the teams, with the athletes, with the coaches, that you know, I'm here 1 week before because I want to be good at this race. And you'll see other athletes that it's not as high priority to be in form in Brazil. And I think, yeah, like Liz said, like we talked in the beginning, is like it's going to be the most unpredictable season and we're going to see people, you know, I'm not surprised by the American girls and Kiara. Like for me, it was obvious that they were going to be on form for these races, and the ones that are, you know, they have Olympics weighing on them and they have to get something on the board. And I think, you know, it's always good to have something on the board and to come in. You always every season see someone with people with early season form. But yeah, I mean, I think if you came to do the three blocks, it's for a reason, and it's because you want to be fast here.
I think the most telling thing that came out of that race was actually Jenny Risved's post-race interview, where she kind of spoke about not just obviously herself coming out on top, but also Kelsey Urban placing top eight, and how it was so much less about the placings in the race, but like their own things that they were trying to achieve, and in finding that they achieved them, like it put them up where they wanted to be.
I love that. I really enjoyed listening to Jenny's interview. It's it doesn't surprise me at all, but I just love like women lifting up other women and Jenny being so excited at Kelsey. You know, she like Chris, I think Kelsey also has all the tools in the toolboxes, but she has just been met with hurdle after hurdle after hurdle. And so it was exciting to see her finally perform at a level that she knows she can. Hopefully she realizes that she can. The rest of us know that she's capable. And then to just have that celebration from her teammate as well, to take the time in her interview to call that out, I thought that was just class act.
It's nice that it's, or at least it comes across that the women's field in general, like have those relationships. Whilst it might not be with everyone, but there is definitely cross-team relationships, which is something you don't get in every sport.
Yeah, I think like the environment in mountain bike is so, it is a big family. And I think, you know, it's something that I would really like to see stay within the sport. I know we're not Formula One and whatever, but, and maybe it's not as maybe desired by Discovery, and you know they maybe want it more cool, but I think, you know, to be part of the sport it's something, you know, all, it's such a nice environment between, you know, the riders, the managers, and you know, you always see in the feed zone, for example, when someone has a flat tire, often it's two mechanics from different teams.
Yeah, everyone's in working on it,
and it's not, you know, I think that is something so special about the sport. It's like you can always go to another team and ask for something, or, you know, offer help. And I think especially you see when we're in the races outside of Europe where, you know, teams are coming, you know, on slightly less support or maybe leaving some staff or things behind, and you see it's always that willingness to work together. It's not so hard and cold and, like, against, and it's something, you know, we see it with the riders. I think sometimes it's a little bit fake and, you know, about, oh, yeah, this. But, I mean, for the most part, it's very genuine. And I think we do have a lot of, like, friendliness, and more importantly is, like, really good respect between the athletes. And I think that's something amazing.
My favourite thing is always the it probably happens a bit more downhill because clearly the team managers in cross country are really organized. But when you see the text being like, oh, can someone bring this bike part? Who's coming from Scotland? Can someone bring this bike with them? Or can someone bring this bike part over? There's so much of that, that everyone kind of pulls together to get the best out of like race day.
Yeah, so, I think especially a location for like Brazil. I mean, most of us don't have our normal team infrastructure here. So everything that you're bringing in, you brought in your luggage. And I know for us, we had 25 or more bags in just, you know, between athletes, between staff. We had so much luggage and we brought a lot, but there were decisions we had to make. We didn't bring everything. And I found out through the grapevine that another rider was looking for a specific spoke and a spoke nipple that is not very common. And our team happened to have one. And it was so nice for us to be able to provide that for her set of spare wheels, because we're kind of all in the same position where we're like, we have a lot, but we don't have everything. So can we just help each other out here?
Yeah, that's lush. A couple of other just, I guess, highlights. Filippo Colombo finishing on the podium after that, like, horrific elbow injury that he had last year. I thought that was awesome. Nice to see him back up there. Obviously, Risfed's coming on top, like her last XCO win, which is mind-blowing, by the way, because she was always on the podium. Was it like 5 years ago, which is utterly mental. Obviously, Kelsey Urban. The Italian that I really quite upsettingly know so little about, Chiara Tiocchi, and then Sevilla Blanc. My knowledge of Sevilla, I met her in Snowshoe on my first ever year, so 2019, and she did a course walk with me and Leah Davidson. And she was super sweet, and I kind of like, okay, I'll keep an eye out for her. And then I remember she just used to turn up with her boyfriend and they would take the van and they did a proper like privateer style approach to racing. And I remember she struggled to get a ride for, that must have been 2 years ago when she stepped up from under 23. And now look at her, that someone took a chance on her, and look at where she's ended up. I think that's a lovely story.
Yeah. And I think that this really, like, I mean, it's internal and it's external. I believe, like, at some point, like, all these engines are maybe close to just as capable, but it's how that engine can be put to use on the track. And so it just goes to show how important it is to invest your resources in those up and coming riders that you see that spark, you see like, okay, I think there might be something here, and to give them the support, because once they have team support, it is so hard to be a privateer and to be successful. But once you have that team support, then the sky's the limit. And Sevilla Blanc is like just a walking advertisement for why you should invest in younger riders.
Like, Beck's nodding ahead, knowing that privateer life.
I agree totally. And you know what? I think it's actually, you know, if it's a tough ride to get a team, it's, you know, it is a tough ride to get a team, I can tell you. But it's like, if you don't get it immediately in your early under 23 years and it takes a little while, it's like, you know, you've done it maybe a little bit harder, but the value and appreciation that you have and your perspective is like, something that you carry, well, I hope, because some riders, you know, you land in a team and you're like, woo, I've got everything, and you think you're the center of the universe. But if you keep your feet on the ground, it's like that appreciation and understanding for how it was and how you have it now and the value that you put on your staff and the people around you, I think it's like, if you know what it's like to not have it, to have it is something that you just never take for granted. And I think that adds so much value to you as a rider, because I think you know, some of them come up and have everything and they don't know the difference of having to take care of their bike or travels or like and then it comes down to tiny details. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, Sevilla has taken that opportunity with two hands and she's like, I'm going to make the most of this. And I think I really, really love to see when riders do get given that opportunity and they take it with two hands and they like embrace it all. And yeah, so it's, and Chiara's the same. I've seen her in small teams over the past years, but yeah, now she's in the Orbea factory team and she's obviously got a lot of motivation for the Olympics too. And I think, you know, she's really going with this opportunity. And I think I wasn't so surprised to see her there, but I'm sure a lot of people were. And I think she's like, I'm here and I want to go to the Olympics, I want to be in the World Cup podium. And I think she will also appreciate that support that she has now.
Well, we can hear that Beck needs to go because someone's knocking on the door.
Sorry. So
I just want to say a massive thank you guys for coming on. We did very poor when it came to previewing the next round, but we'll worry about that another day.
Thanks a bunch, Laura. That was super fun. Beck, good to see you as usual, and I'll see you on the track.
Amazing. Thanks for doing this, Lauren. I think it's, you know, so nice to have this interest in the sport. And, you know, obviously you still have so much passion for the racing, and it's, and your point of view is so valuable, and your knowledge of the riders and what goes on behind the scenes is, it's special, and really happy to still have you as a part of it.
Oh, you guys are lush. Thank you. It's just nice to see everybody. It's like I've lost a massive friendship group.